Collins shook his face in grim wonder. "Only thing is, I couldn't ever believe anybody would look at that skinny little squirrel and figure him for a killer. Dog'll do it to any bitch he finds, Erno told me, once he smells heat." My uncle knew the police. "That's why you said at the jail in 91 that you'd never testify, right?" Muriel asked Collins. "When you told us about the cameo?"
"Right," said Collins. "Couldn't do that. Rami would have recognized me as Pharaoh straight away. No way to keep the whole tale from coming out then. But it worked. I got my 10, and Uncle Erno, he just drove on by like it was an accident on the highway. My uncle was good to me all the time I was inside. Come visit, packages, whatnot, lecturing me to make the most of this chance when I got out. That came late 96. Old Pharaoh, nobody had tumbled to that, so I was Pharaoh again, ready to go back into travel agenting, but the truth is, I wasn't on the street 48 hours, for I had a pipe in my hand. Everything the same. I was strung out. Erna wouldn't even speak my name. Only thing, I was afraid to start in slanging again. I knew it was life for sure if I got busted with quantity. Couldn't give up my uncle on the murders this time, because I'd put Gandalf inside already, and there'd be nobody to believe a different tale. One night, I was hurting bad. I needed to cop and didn't even have those maws in my pockets they show in the cartoons. And it come to me that Erno said all that stuff we took out of Paradise that night was still under his tool shed. I went over there with a shovel and started in digging till I found that apron. Cloth was full of holes, but everything was inside. All I had in mind to do was to sell some of it, the watches and rings, so I could buy a couple of bottles, but I saw that gun in there, and it come into my head that if I had that, I could shake big money out of my uncle. Might be that his fingerprints were still on the gun, so he'd have no choice. Gonna have to give me what he owed me. I was back to that, how he owed me. My aunt came home, and she said he was down at Ike's. I run in there holding that gun by the barrel so I didn't wipe off any prints Ernold left on the handle. I was screaming about how he messed me up and owed me. I wasn't thinking too good, naturally enough. Half the folks in that place were police and armed, and they all had their gats out and pointed straight at me 10 seconds after I said my first word. "Give me that thing," Erno says, and he takes the pistol straight out of my hand, push me outside, trying to talk sense how I was going to get killed carrying on like this and couldn't put those killings on him now that I put them on Gandalf. I said, "Hell, that gun probably got your fingerprints all over it." "What of it?" he says. 20 cops just saw me take it out of your hand." He was right, too, probably, but it was the same old doo-doo so far as I was concerned. Him right and white and me black and back. "Yeah," I say, "I got the rest of where that come from back at your house and a hole under your shed where it's been, and you ain't walking from what you done this time. I'm going back in there and tell everybody you know what a murdering coward you been." Erno didn't care for surprises. I was sashaying back inside, and he was screaming out to me, "Don't do it! Don't do it!" Last I recall was going through the door. Don't even remember the bang. Just the light. I saw Jesus' face that night. I truly did. I heard his voice. I was laying on that floor, dying, I think. But wherever I was, I knew I was all right now. And I have been. I went down to Atlanta not long after I was out of the hospital. Been there since. Had my life. And finally done right. Now, of course, it was all turned around. Erno was inside and I was outside. I was the one going to visit and telling him how Jesus could be looking out for him, too. Might be he heard me. I was never sure. But something come to him once he knew he was sick. Couldn't just die with all those sins on him. I went to see him not long after New Year's when he got the word about how bad the cancer was. I was trying to offer comfort, and he just looks at me in the middle of stuff, and he says, "They're going to execute that poor moron pretty soon." I knew what he meant. It wasn't the first time we talked about it. "We can't let them do that," says Erno. "Do what you have to," I told him. "No," he says, "I ain't going to have shot you through the back to save your life and mine, just to put you in the middle of all this now. The police will never believe you weren't in on the shooting. I'll tell what needs to be told. Not too sure I can get anybody to listen, but I'm going to try. You just keep your mouth shut. Call Lawyer Ayers. Fifth Amendment all the way." Collins looked up from his lap, and his light eyes found Muriel's. "That's what happened," he told her. It was one of those days when it was just going to get hotter until the sunset. Even at 4 p.m., as Muriel stood with Molto and Larry in the parking lot outside Ayers' office, she could feel the blacktop softening under her feet. "So?" she asked. Each was mopey. "I need to think about it," said Molto. "I want to go over the case file. Give me 24. Let's all have a conference on Friday." Larry and Molto made at once for their cars to escape the heat. Muriel walked to Larry's Concord before he left. She could feel a touch of the air-conditioned cool inside when he let down the window. "We never had that talk," she told him. "No, we didn't." He had put on his Oakleys, and she couldn't see his eyes, which was probably just as well. "Any point?" "I have some things to say," he shrugged. "I'll be at that house tomorrow night," he said, "putting together a punch list for my crew. Stop by for a beer, if you like." "There, a square," she said. He pulled out without looking back at her. She opened her car and was still outside letting the heat escape when Jackson toddled from the glass doors toward his Cadillac, his briefcase under his arm. "Have you heard the latest on this case?" she asked him.
"What's that?"
"Arthur Raven and Gillian Sullivan in the Chapel of Love."
"No," said Jackson.
He emitted a high cackle. "Whoo, how long is that going on?" Muriel shrugged.
"Doesn't that beat everything?" Jackson asked.
"Arthur Raven and the Junkie Judge."
"The who?"
"Oh, that's just what I called her, the Junkie Judge. Gillian, the Junkie Judge. I had several clients who swore they saw her copping out on the street when she was still on the bench.
Crack.
Heroin."
"A junkie," said Muriel.
"That's what she was, but she isn't today. Today she's in the Chapel of Love."